Dairy supplement.
I'll call the Health, Education, and Social Services meeting together today. Today is Tuesday, April 6th, and it is 5 minutes after 3:00. And I'd like to recognize our staff today. We have our House Recording Secretary is Kelly Burnett, and our LIO moderator is Justin Hayes, and our HESS aide is Linda Miller. And before we start, if there are anyone out there with cell phones, if you would mute them, that would be wonderful. Thank you very much. And let the record show that Representative Seaton, Representative Gatto, and Representative Cisna are present at the meeting besides myself, Wilson. And I'd like to announce today that we're going to go till 4 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock we need to adjourn because I've got something else I need to go to. And so today what we're going to do, we're going to go through two bills, House Bill 467, Administration of Medication by Nurse, and Senate Bill 177, Practice of Psychology. And I'm going to hold both those bills because I've got questions that haven't been answered yet for myself, and so we will carry on with them, though, and next week we'll probably hear them next week. So let's start with House Bill 467, Administration of Medication by Nurse. This is behind your red tab, tab number one in your HESS binder. And let the record show that Representative Gardner has joined us. And this bill is sponsored by Representative Kelly, and Derek Miller, his staff, is going to read the bill for us. And Derek, well, first of all, before we do that, we have before us House Bill 467. It's version G, dated 2/13/06. So if we'd like to move that, that's the bill that we'd like to have before us. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 467, version G, for discussion.
Okay, thank you. There are no objections, so moved. And Derek, go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Derek Miller, staff to represent Mike Kelly, and I just have some brief comments here. Before you today is House Bill 467. This bill was introduced with the goal of working out a reasonable solution to the current Board of Nursing policy that prevents most registered nurses in the state of Alaska from administering prescribed remedies and dietary supplements for patients in a nursing facility, an assisted living home, or an Alaska Pioneers home. In recent years, the Board of Nursing has determined that it is outside of the scope of practice for a nurse to administer remedies that are not FDA approved, even if the patient requests them, the doctor prescribes them, and the facility has approved written procedures for administering them. We believe that this is too restrictive, and House Bill 467 would allow nurses to administer such remedies provided that it is a prescribed remedy or dietary supplement administered within the manufacturer's recommended dosage. This legislation was introduced after Representative Kelly received a letter from Rick Shakur in Fairbanks. Mr. Shakur's grandmother lives in the Fairbanks Pioneers home, and she has bad knees and dementia. Her doctor prescribed glucosamine and fish oil pills, and nurses were willing to administer them, but because of the Board of Nursing decision, the Pioneer Home discontinued their administration. Mr. Shakur was forced to go to the Pioneer Home daily to give her the prescribed remedies. This seems to just make good sense to fix this problem, and we have found many lay and professional folks who agree. We think current policy is not in the best interest of the patient, and we propose a common sense solution. Other states have found ways to safely administer these supplements, and HB 467 would permit Alaska to do the same. Okay. And with that, I can take questions, or I know there's other people to testify as well.
Do we have anybody to testify?
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where we're talking on page 1, line 14, and then lines 1 and 2 on the next page. Prescribed remedy or dietary supplement includes over-the-counter herbal vitamin remedies prescribed by a person authorized under this title to prescribe the remedy or supplement. Who is authorized under this title to prescribe remedies or supplements? And is there more than one category of people? And are supplements... do they need prescriptive authorization?
It's my understanding that you need prescripted authorization, and in this case, it would be a physician with prescriptive authority. There might be some other individuals with prescriptive authority, and I can look specifically for you if you would request that information on who else would have that authority in this statute.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Yes, I would like to follow that up and find out what that is, but I'm also curious on supplements as to whether there is any requirement for them to be prescribed, or if this bill is saying that even if something doesn't need to be prescribed, it would only be administered by a nurse if it is prescribed by a physician.
Correct. The your second part of the statement would be correct under this bill. The dietary supplement would have to be prescribed to be administered to the individual in the facility, in the assisted living facility representative.
And I'm sorry, I missed that first part. Who has to prescribe it?
And I'll look into who all has prescriptive authority in this statute, but it's my understanding that the physician obviously has prescriptive authority, and I mean, I know that there's some other individuals with prescriptive authority, and there's probably some people online that might be able to better answer that question.
Okay. And let the record show that Representative Corrine has joined us.
Apologize for being late.
What I would like to do is go off net, because we have some people off net that are would like to testify, so I think that's the direction I'm going to do first here. So we have Kathy Giesel. Are you online, Kathy?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Would you like to go ahead and state your name and your affiliation and give us your testimony?
I would be happy to. My name is Kathy Giesel. I am testifying today as the chairperson of the Alaska Board of Nursing. I'm an advanced nurse practitioner. I am board certified in family practice, and I have full prescriptive authority in Alaska, including controlled substances. I want to tell you before I begin my testimony a little bit about my experience so that you understand the background with which I testify. I care for people of all ages. I have worked in urgent care settings. I've worked for several years in pediatrics, and I've had 2.5 years of experience working in alternative medicine, in an alternative medicine clinic in Anchorage. I currently work at the Alaska Spine Institute, where approximately a third of my patient panel are Medicare patients, so they're senior citizens. My oldest patient is 91 years old. In addition, my master's thesis was on the subject of the administration of herbal nutritional supplements and homeopathic supplements to children under the age of 3. So I've had a lot of hands-on experience with the substances that are being referred to in HB 467. I have submitted to all of you a written position paper, and I know that I just sent that to you last night. Hopefully you got that. I'm just going to highlight some parts of it. You certainly can read it yourself at a later time, or maybe you already have. The Board of Nursing's responsibility is public protection. We regulate nursing practice in a way to ensure public safety. Over the last decade, the board has been approached on at least 3 separate occasions to discuss this topic. And I want to just briefly review them for you. The first time it happened was in 1998. There was a person in an assisted living home whose physician had ordered an herbal substance for them. The nurses were concerned about the administration of this. They asked the board for a statement. And it was at this time that the board first stated that it was outside the scope of practice for nurses to administer remedies that are not FDA approved. Then the subject came up again in 1999. This time, the subject was homeopathic substances. The board reviewed a reference book entitled Nursing Responsibility Regarding Herbal Remedies, and again, based on the information in that book, underscored once again that it was outside the scope of practice for nurses to be administering these items. In 2002...
Kathy?
Yes.
Now, can you tell us why they came to that conclusion? The facts, so that would help us to understand that?
I certainly can. In each of these situations, and I've only now addressed or made you aware of an herbal preparation that was desired to be administered, a homeopathic, again later, herbal substances were brought forward. In 2003, nurses were being asked to administer a medication that was approved in Europe, but not in the United States. So in each of these situations, the board looked at what these substances were. With herbal medications, a lot of people think that these are very safe because they're natural. But in fact, many of our pharmaceutical agents are derived from herbs. Foxglove, for example, is actually digitoxin, which is used for heart conditions. It's a very powerful herb and can significantly affect the heart. People think, well, if I get it in a natural form, it's going to be safe. And in fact, that's not the case. It's just as bioactive. It affects the body just as dramatically as a pharmaceutical drug. So the board looked at this. It also looked at facts such as the identification of what is in the capsule that says foxglove or comfrey or chamomile, and discovered that, in fact, many of these herbs are misidentified. You probably, many of you are aware, if you've ever looked into gathering mushrooms or gathering berries, that if you don't know exactly what you're picking, it's very easy to pick the wrong berry or the wrong mushroom. The same is true of these plants. You can easily misidentify them. And so this has happened in the past. In the document that I submitted to you, I have included a reference list. And there you will find specific articles from the literature which identify situations where people were taking herbal substances that were adulterated with something else, were misidentified herbs, or contained such powerful herbs that it actually caused injury or death. So these are the kinds of facts that the board looked at in considering the herbs and the homeopathic remedies. Now, in the case in 2003, of the substance from Europe. It's actually a medication developed in Europe, had not been FDA approved yet in the United States. The board took the information and decided that they would look into this more. In the interim, in the following month, the FDA actually approved this medication, and it's now being used in nursing homes. It's used for Alzheimer's, and it's quite an effective drug. But without that FDA approval, the board could not say that the public would be safe if nurses were administering this, because we didn't know what the clinical trials would show in this country. The FDA puts these drugs through very stringent trials to assure their safety, to identify their side effect profile, and that hadn't been done. So again, the board is looking at public safety. Now, the most recent issue that Derek referred to our nutritional supplements. So this is a whole nother category of items that are out there for the public to use. In the case that he's citing, he's referring to fish oil capsules and glucosamine. Now, it may seem to you as you're sitting there, I'm sure many of you legislators sitting there say, well, you know, I take this stuff too. Most of the public is not aware that fish oil can prolong bleeding time. And if someone is on another blood thinner, this can make their bleeding time even longer, so that a bleed in their brain or in another organ is now a risk. With glucosamine, it's commonly combined with chondroitin, which can cause enlargement of the prostate or recurrence of prostate cancer in men. Many people in the public don't know this. I'm aware of this because as a practitioner, I see people on a daily basis, and men commonly identify themselves as taking chondroitin and are not aware of the risks. This is not common information for nurses. Nurses are not trained in these alternative therapies. I'm going to use that term, and what I'm doing is referring, by saying alternative therapies, I'm referring to nutritional supplements, herbal, homeopathic preparations, and that whole category of medications that people can get from other countries that are not approved here in the United States. This is not part of the basic nursing education. And so nurses have to make a judgment when they're practicing in whatever setting it is. The registered nurse has to make a judgment. If I give this substance, this pharmaceutical drug that is FDA approved, whatever it is this going to potentially harm my patient? Do I know what this drug will do? Do I understand the side effects? Do I know what I'm looking for in terms of adverse events? The Board of Nursing is aware that nurses do not have this training in their background. We have a nurse educator always present on the board. And consistently, those nurse educators have reminded the board that this kind of education is not part of the nursing education. The safety of these substances, of course, we cannot be assured of. But in addition, what we've been faced with is questions from assisted living homes and the Pioneers Home. The people that are cared for in these facilities are a very vulnerable population. They typically have very complex disease entities, typically more than one disease going on. They typically have multiple medications being administered to them that are FDA approved and are therapeutic and so forth. But when you bring in these additional substances, the effect on these individuals is virtually unknown because they haven't been clinically trialed the way the FDA-approved drugs are. So the elderly are very vulnerable, so are the very young. But we've been dealing mainly with the elderly, and again, public safety is our key issue. So when we look at this, some people have said, well, you know, the nurse is protected. If the physician orders it, the nurse needs to just follow that order and there won't be any ramifications for her. But in fact, that is not true. Nurses are accountable for their actions and they have a duty to the patient to give that patient safe nursing care. And that duty for care cannot be replaced by a doctor's order or a facility policy. So as the board looked at all of these facts, and we looked at them impartially and objectively, we could not say that this would be a safe practice. And therefore, we have upheld in all of these instances, and most recently, just a few weeks ago, that it is unsafe and therefore outside the scope of practice for a licensed nurse to administer nutritional supplements, herbal and homeopathic preparations, or other non-FDA-approved medications. At the same time, the board recognizes that the patient and their family certainly have the right to make the decision to self-administer these substances. And we have, of course, no problem with that. That's a patient decision. And patients determine that they will self-administer these things all the time. But it is not appropriate for the registered nurse to be administering these. In the documents that Representative Kelly accumulated in studying this subject, and I will commend his research staff, they did a wonderful job, he polled 13 states and felt that the results from those 13 states created a mandate in that 9 of these states said this is appropriate. They had no problem with this. But I want to make this committee aware that there are 61 boards of nursing. And so a poll of 13 states is in no way conclusive. The board itself did a survey of other boards of nursing several years ago. We did, let's see, I think it was 31, no, it was 61 boards of nursing, and found that more than half of them banned the practice. Majority of them had no specific policy on this, but there are significantly more boards than just the 13 here. The other thing that is of concern is that the Alaska Pioneer Home has a policy in place that actually asks the patient to waive liability for the facility, and I think the nurse here, as I read it. This, to me, is further documentation that the nursing home recognizes that these are unsafe products and are having to ask for this waiver from patients. But, you know, if there's an adverse event, that nurse that administered it will not be held exempt because the patient has signed this waiver. That in no way protects the nurse. But that's not the board's main concern. The main concern is that we don't want to see any Alaskans in these situations harmed by these non-FDA-approved substances. So, Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony. If anyone has any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Do you have any questions? Representative Gardner does.
Thank you, Kathy. I found your testimony really interesting because I had no idea that nurses carried that liability when they were carrying out a physician's orders. What would happen in the case if a physician gave orders that a nurse thought was contrary to the patient's welfare and the nurse was unable to persuade the doctor of those concerns?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, in that situation, it is the nurse's responsibility to decline to carry out that physician order. And this is not a rare occurrence. I wouldn't say it's common. But if the nurse is unable to persuade the physician, it is her responsibility to refuse to carry out the order.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Kathy, you mentioned that, I think you specifically mentioned chondroitin as a substance that could cause prostate cancer or cause the recurrence of prostate cancer. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, yes, that is true. It's a recurrence that seems to be connected with the use of chondroitin. And again, because clinical trials haven't been thoroughly performed, it is mainly anecdotal evidence at this point. But that suffices for me as a prescriber, and I caution all of my male patients.
The reason I asked is because I've been talking to oncologists for some time now, and I actually mentioned this as a substance that's used, and not a single one ever referred to it in the way you did. They said, well, it works, it doesn't work, there's some evidence, it's anecdotal, but no one ever associated it with somehow related, even, never mind causing prostate cancer. And so that's puzzling to me. I'm curious to know, you said it's anecdotal. What does that mean to you?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, you have asked an excellent question, and it really underscores another aspect of this whole issue, and that is the fact that not only are nurses not fully educated and informed about these substances, the medical profession, the physicians, are not either. Most of the research that's been done on these products has been done by alternative medicine providers who are generally in the medical community viewed as outsiders, outside the mainstream, so to speak. And the research that they do is typically not highly regarded and not well publicized. The reason that I'm aware of it is because I did practice in alternative medicine at an alternative medicine clinic for 2.5 years and attended several conferences on the subject, and that's where I became aware of the information. But this is not commonly known information.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto?
Thanks. Madam Chair, one more time. Saw palmetto has often been prescribed. I think that's now... And that's over several years now, five that I'm aware of. And PC Spes, I think you probably are one of the people that know what that is. That was strongly advocated and then removed from the market, actually, never mind, even though it was just an herbal supplement, as somewhat dangerous. Does that, and I think that does sort of back up some of the comments you made.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, absolutely. Another excellent example, and that wasn't even included in my references, but you're right. This is what happens. Now, it could be argued that when the FDA approves a drug, often years later, as the drug has more widespread use, adverse events are discovered and the drug is pulled from the market. Bextra and Vioxx are two most recent that many people are aware of. But this is definitely true with the herbal and nutritional supplements. But again, with these substances, since the FDA is not approving them, adverse events are not mandatorily reported. The customer may call the manufacturer and report this adverse event, but the manufacturer is not obligated to put that into any database anywhere or make that public information. The FDA will investigate if there has been reports to them of significant injury, and then they will divert some of their resources to exploring this. But there are so many of these supplements out there and so many manufacturers, the FDA simply doesn't have the resources to keep exploring all of them and determine the safety of everything.
Okay, thank you very much, Kathy. I don't see any other questions, so thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Representative Seaton has a question.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out the balancing act here. So we have physicians that have prescription authority that basically we have to be saying that physicians are not doing their job in if they prescribe these remedies, because the only thing we're talking about is things that are prescribed by a physician. And so the nurses are unable to administer the prescription because of the FDA approval, because it hasn't been FDA approved, and we're just deciding that the doctor's prescription isn't adequate. Is that what the basis, basically, we come down to?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, you asked a question earlier as to who could prescribe. In the state of Alaska, of course, physicians prescribe. Nurse practitioners and PAs also have prescriptive authority. No, we're not saying that physicians are not doing their job. We're saying that healthcare is administered, is delivered by a team of people. And that team consists of the prescriber, who may be a physician, PA, or nurse practitioner, the person administering it in a facility, who is typically a registered nurse. There's usually, with prescribed FDA-approved medication, there's a pharmacist involved too. And so there are at least three points of contact that evaluate a prescription. Now, the reason that these substances we're talking about here, these non-FDA-approved substances, are being, quote, prescribed, end quote, is because the patient is in a facility. Now, the family themselves could decide that they wanted to give their senior citizen some St. John's wort, for example. Depression is very common in the elderly, and the family may decide to administer the St. John's wort. There would not need to be a prescription of any kind, just as if you decided you wanted to try that particular herb, you would not need a prescription. The prescription part of this comes into play because the nursing home, the Alaska Pioneer Home, has this in their policy. But these are not substances that need prescriptions. They're over-the-counter. It's in the facility's policy that this needs to be prescribed. It's not that physicians are not doing their job. It's that the nurse is responsible to know what she's administering, what side effects to look for, and whether or not this is going to interact with other medications that the individual is taking. So the nurse is doing her part, her or his part, in being one of those people that assures patient safety in this whole delivery of healthcare scheme. So that's where the Board of Nursing comes in as far as overseeing nursing practice to ensure public safety. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. We have Gina Edmondson from the Denali Center. Gina, did you, it's down here for you just to answer questions. Did you have any comments that you wanted to make?
I would say the only comment that I would make, and I'm the associate administrator for Denali Center, which is the long-term care center associated with Fairbanks Memorial Hospital in Fairbanks. And I would say that in support of the bill, and also I should note that I am a registered nurse and practiced clinically and in the intensive care for several years and various other positions in the hospital before going into long-term care. We do, in our facility, we do have a certainly a pharmacy as well that reviews anything that is administered to a resident or a patient, and that would be whether or not it is the patient's own medication that they're taking at the bedside, or if it is distributed through the hospital pharmacy. So, in essence, if a person were to come into the hospital and their doctor prescribed the St. John's wort, and that the patient could take their own medication, that medication would still go to our pharmacy for review, and any potential side effects, drug interactions, or disease interactions would be analyzed before it was permissible to be given in the hospital. So that's just one more level of review that facilities can put into place, indeed, if they have a pharmacy.
Gina, this is Representative Wilson. Right now, currently, what is the policy there currently as far as the nurses administering these medications?
Right now, we have basically a pharmacy policy, and the pharmacy policy is really as stated to medications that come in from home having to actually go physically, those medications going to the pharmacy for review, for contents to be reviewed, and for that analysis to be done on drug or disease interactions. And typically in the hospital, then the patient would take his or her own medications. In the long-term care setting, there's very few. I can think of cranberry tablets being the one that is used at Denali Center a lot, and cranberry tablets are used to help aid in the prevention of urinary tract infections, which are a huge problem in the nursing home population, and that would be about the only one that would be distributed in the nursing home right now.
So do the nurses do that, or is that at the bedside?
I would say that our nurses probably assist with that, because most of our residents here, or I wouldn't say most, but a good number of our residents here cannot self-administer.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Senator, or I mean, Representative Seaton has a question.
You're spreading that rumor again. I saw that. Mm-hmm. I just had a question. In the Native population, do we have any Native foods or anything else that wouldn't be in the qualification of an FDA-approved substance that is allowed to be given to patients in the homes? Or are you aware of any?
I am not aware of any at this point. When I talked with the pharmacist here, really the cranberry tablets are the only one that we actually have that do get distributed, and that's very, that's pretty common with our population, and they do have excellent track record for us.
Okay, thank you.
I don't see any other questions. Well, Representative Gatto has a question.
Could I just make one more comment?
Sure.
It's difficult for me, certainly being a nurse and knowing I can wholeheartedly agree with a lot of the comments that have been made earlier. But it's also difficult for me, though, to imagine not being able to give a cranberry tablet at Denali Center when I know that these residents don't have families to assist them with that. Many are in from villages. They might have a power of attorney person that comes and sees them once a month, and we are it. We are their family. And so it's we give it or it isn't going to be given. So again, it's a difficult question. It's not an easy question.
Representative Gatto.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I think from the amount of reading I've done, and in fact, we had a Dr. Mark Moyad here a couple of weeks ago. He's written a pretty substantial book on dietary supplements, and I believe I know he's an oncologist. And we had a chat, and he was talking about the lack of the exact measurement of some of the dietary supplements over the counter, the amount of actual product that is used to measure the activity can vary several hundredths of a percent from one brand to another, from one box to another. Have you had has that become an issue for you in where you're working?
And I'm sorry, is that directed to the Denali Center, or is that directed to the
Gina?
Nurse practitioner.
To the nurse practitioner, in your experience, has...
Kathy.
Okay, Kathy, then. I guess it doesn't matter. I'm looking for somebody who's had some experience and said, when I've given these dietary supplements, we learned later on that sometimes we were half dosing, sometimes we were double dosing. Has that been an issue with you? I guess that's what I'm trying to find out.
I don't know.
This is Kathy Giesel, Chair of the Board of Nursing. Representative Gatto, are you redirecting that to me?
I think you would be an excellent person to answer that.
All right. Well, through the chair, Representative Gatto, that is a difficult question to answer because with a lot of these substances, their effects are difficult to quantify. And so I can't really say in my experience that I've seen, a lot of variation in terms of the response. When I worked at the specific alternative medicine clinic, there was variable response to any of these substances, just as there are to pharmaceutical substances. While I might prescribe a certain pain medication at a certain dosage for one person and it relieves their pain totally, the next person it doesn't do anything for. And that's because our biochemistry is different in each individual, and some people metabolize drugs faster than others and all of that, which doesn't really get down to your question. I can't tell you that I've seen or that I can quantify that I've seen variable response. I know that each manufacturer has different quantities, and yes, you're absolutely right, there is no standardization of any of these products. And so that's really all I can say to that.
Thank you, Kathy. Let's go on to Rick Shikora. You're a certified PA?
I'm a certified public accountant in Fairbanks. My name is Rick Shikora. Okay. And Madam Chair, I guess I'm the one that started all of this.
Oh, okay.
My grandmother is at the Pioneers Home here in Fairbanks. She's 98 years old. And up until recently, around Christmas time, has had virtually no medical problems. But her knees have been bothering her for a few years. She's been in the Pioneers Home for 3 years at the end of March, just this past. The entire time that she's been there, the first 2 years that she was there, we provided Cosamine DS, which is a brand name, and fish oil pills, tri-omega-3 fish oil pills for the folks over there to administer to her. And due to one of the Board of Nursing inquiries, I guess, it came back to the Pioneers Home that they shouldn't be doing this or that they should be questioning it. And the Pioneers Home sent out a letter saying that they were going to discontinue. Actually, I guess the different Pioneers Homes handled it slightly differently amongst themselves, but the Fairbanks Pioneers Home said that they would administer until they ran out of whatever was being administered, and then they wouldn't do it anymore. And if I had been, I suppose if I had been really sharp, I would have gone out and bought a case of each, and they would have been continuing on, and we wouldn't be here today. The issue was that very shortly after they ran out and Grandma wasn't being given the Cosamine DS and the fish oil pills, her knees really started bothering her to the point that she would hardly get up and walk around. And one of the nurses over there, because I'd go by and see her every 3 or 4 days or 2 or 3 days or whatever my schedule would allow. You know, and this time of year, being in the tax business, it doesn't allow very well, but I'd still go over there and try to see her. One of them said to me, you know, you can give her these pills, but I had to keep them off premises because they're concerned that other residents might get a hold of them and self-medicate or do whatever. So I went out and I bought a bunch of the stuff that she'd been taking that I'd previously been delivering to the Pioneers Home, and I started going over every day and giving her these pills, and immediately she started improving. And the concern that I have isn't for my grandmother, because she's 98 and I really don't expect that she'll be living another 4 or 5 years. But it's for all of those folks that I think it was Gina from the Denali Center is talking about, that are similarly situated at the Pioneers Home, where they don't have family or they don't have somebody to come by and see them every day. I happen to work reasonably close to the place so that I can get by there fairly easily. But if these folks were in from the villages there or other places or maybe even around town here, it might be very difficult for somebody to get by. After seeing my grandmother in the response to these non-FDA approved supplements that she was taking, and the improvement in her obvious physical capabilities and being able to stand and walk and do that kind of thing, I was talking with the nurses, and they said, we ought to be able to do this. And the reason that they're not is because they're afraid for their licenses. The nursing board has not been specific in their characterization of this. In one, and I don't have this exact quote, but it was, it's outside of the scope of practice. In another place, it was, we may not support you. And it was... it was for those reasons that the nurses are afraid to participate in this. The Pioneers Home does have a policy that says that they will get a coordinator to handle this, and that the nurses can provide this administration to residents if they wish to. Based on that and some, waking up in the middle of the night and thinking about it, I put together a policy that was submitted to the Board of Nursing, and I believe Derek Miller has a copy of this that if he does, I'd ask him to provide it to you.
Yeah, we have it.
Okay, and it isn't finally polished. The reason that I typed it up and presented it to the Board of Nursing was so that they might accept this document. It doesn't require anybody to do anything that they feel is outside of their scope of practice. My younger daughter is an RN practicing in Oregon right now, and she has read my policy, and she said there isn't anything in there that would require a nurse to do something or not do something. It would, the policy would allow them to, if they, you know, if they got comfortable with the product that was wanting to be administered. Ms. Geisel, you know, talked about the cosamine or glucosamine and the chondroitin, you know, and the concerns that are there with prostate cancer. I really don't believe that that's going to be my grandmother's problem. But if a nurse were to be asked to administer this under this policy that I proposed, or under the Pioneers Home policy, if she was concerned that there might be this anecdotal connection, she could refuse and just say, no, I don't wish to do that. And there would be no repercussions to her for taking that stand, or no repercussions if she did administer, you know, like to my grandmother. What's happening now is the nurses are afraid to try to administer because of the Board of Nursing. And when we talk about 61 boards of nursing, and I haven't, you know, tried to do that, duplicate the survey that the Board of Nursing did in the past, maybe half of them, as I understood it, were opposed to this. Others may not have had any policy. And more recently, Derek Miller and his research has found, I think it was 13 that are okay with it. I think Alaska, especially with our aging population and whatnot, we ought to be on the forefront of trying to accommodate in these situations. But we ought to do it in a fashion that doesn't require the nurse to do it and doesn't punish her if she does, he or she. And it's not something that I'm, again, you know, fighting for just for my grandmother, because there's a lot of older folks over at the Pioneers Home, and I'm sure there will be in the future that won't have somebody that can go over and administer. I think I can quit with that and let you know that I'm serious about seeing something happen where the Board of Nursing either authorizes this or state law gets changed to basically require them to authorize it.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. I know this is a dilemma and can understand your plight here. Mike Powers from Fairbanks Memorial Hospital.
Yes, how's the connection?
Just fine. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mike Powers. I'm the administrator for Fairbanks Memorial Hospital Center. Jenna Edmonston is the associate who reports up through me, and she's much closer to this issue, especially as a former ICU nurse. A couple of quick comments. Kathy Geisel, I think, was very eloquent, accurate, articulate on what she laid out. And clearly this, as Representative Seaton said, is a difficult balancing act. But when Kathy talked about public safety and duty to care, she's right on the money. And when it comes to foxglove and mushrooms and various berries in St. John's Wort, there are grave concerns. Hospitals, long-term care centers, above all, are concerned about safety, the environment of care, safe facilities, safe medication practices, safe general clinical practices. However, I think Mr. Shikora has hit on something, and it's picked up by Representative Kelly on a call for reasonableness. There are some things that would be helpful for our nurses to provide even better care, and it may be provision of things such as cranberry juice for UTIs or fish oil or something like that. A couple of quick comments. What you have here is a representative listening to a constituent who has a very good case this representative happens to be on our board. The local foundation was probably the primary person behind the university. Now, Karen Perdue had a big part of this, but just at the local provider level, on moving the entire nursing program and embracing nursing in the hospital very active in magnet status here, and he understands that nurses are the backbone of a hospital long-term care. So this call for reasonableness, which maybe the Alaska Nurses Association has picked up in their offer to sit down and investigate this matter, may be one of the ways we address this. And what I would like to suggest, first of all, I'm supportive of HB 467. If it does not move, and if it maybe morphs into another effort to really make a meaningful effort and have around the table with the Alaska Nurses Association or the Board of Nursing or long-term care providers in particular, the staff of those legislators who really can make a difference and find some common ground here, because I think it will help our entire health system, especially those of us who are dealing with so many unique situations, residents from 6 months to 122 years, five dialects spoken, people all over the Alaskan map, so to speak. So in short, supportive, very meaningful, have full faith in the Alaska Board of Nursing, but we've got something here that we're going to have to both find a little common ground on. I think it'll be best for the patients and residents.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Hang on, though, because we have some questions. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Powers, for your testimony, and I'm actually impressed by the reasonable attitudes of everybody who's testifying from every different angle. Do you know if Mr. Shikora's suggested, I guess his list of suggestions for allowing nurses to administer non-FDA-approved substances, if that has been supplied or reviewed by the nursing board?
I don't know.
He gave it to them.
Okay.
He did say that he gave it to them, and they looked at it, and actually, to bring everybody up to date, the nursing board has looked at it, has said, given it to a subcommittee, and that subcommittee is doing their work on it now.
The Board of Nursing did review that document. The Alaska Nurses Association, and you, I think the committee has provided that letter by the Alaska Nurses Association. These are two separate entities here. On the second page of the Alaska Nurses Association letter, the president of the Alaska Nurses Association has asked the Nurses Association Professional Practice Committee to investigate the issue and provide recommendations to the Alaska Nurses Association at large. It's my understanding that they will then forward that recommendation that they adopt to the Board of Nursing.
So it's kind of in the works.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mike. We have Charlotte Davis from Fairbanks.
Yes, this is Charlotte Davis. Okay. Is this a good connection?
It sure is. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Okay, my name's Charlotte Davis, and I've been a registered nurse in Fairbanks since 1983. I've been in the field for 40 years, and as a registered nurse, I'm urging you to defeat passage or movement of House Bill 467. I believe each of you received a lengthy email from me with some bullets as to the reasons why I feel this bill should be defeated or not moved forward. And I think the most important thing to me is my code of ethics that states that I need to do everything in my power to promote, advocate, and to protect the health, safety, and rights of the residents or patients or elders or clients. And because we cannot know what amounts of active ingredients are in one brand versus another brand, because there's no sound scientific study on the efficacy or the safety of any particular product, that we need to defeat the passage of this. I'm going with what I call the fraud factor. Right now, the manufacturers of these dietary supplements can use very colorful, wonderful language to promote a particular product. And this is $200 to $300 billion a year. And right now, they are targeting the most vulnerable population, our elderly. And we as nurses need to protect those elderly, both against the fraud of financial exploitation. Someone's buying St. John's wort, but it only has 1% of the amount that it should be in there. But the most important thing is the FDA is required to prove that a particular supplement has caused harm. They cannot approve these in advance because they're considered a food substance. But it is only after the fact that they have to do the studies to prove that it's unsafe. Ephedra is one example of something that has been removed off the market. These supplements interfere with herbs, drugs, treatments. They can not only be dangerous but life-threatening. They may interfere with tests and procedures and cause complications with surgery. And how many more supplements are on the market now from how many more different countries? How many more different manufacturers are there that the manufacturers themselves have determined them as safe? You're kind of putting the fox in the hen house. By saying, yeah, those are all safe, so we can give them in whatever doses that the manufacturer actually recommends the dosage of these supplements. So it is not something that requires a prescription from a healthcare provider. I certainly support residents in their choices as to taking supplements they may have been taking for 20 years. Even as a registered nurse, I must ask about those supplements and herbals and homeopathic remedies and record them for review by the physician and by the pharmacy. I'm required as a standard of practice to record any of these supplements that a resident or a client or patient is taking. So I support my board of nursing fully on this point, and I am not afraid of my board of nursing. And I don't know of very many nurses that are afraid of the board of nursing. They're there to help guide us and protect us and to also provide us with that standard of care, help guide us in choosing a scope of nursing practice, expanding our scope of nursing practice, but doing so in a manner that protects both the resident, elder, whatever term you want to use. So I just want to say that I would encourage you to either not move this bill or defeat passage of this bill and to truly help protect all the vulnerable elders that are in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte. Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Thank you. I was a little confused in your testimony. This bill here would only let a registered nurse give the items if it was on a prescription. So doesn't matter whether it's fish oil or something else, it would have to be prescribed by someone that is authorized to make prescriptions in Alaska. And also, it doesn't mandate that the RN does that, but it says that if it's above the manufactured recommended dose, they can't administer it. So I guess I'm trying to balance your testimony here and make sure that we're, you know, talking in the same light. Was that your understanding of what the bill did?
Well, in the first place, the only reason that a herbal or a homeopathic remedy or such in this light, a dietary supplement, would need to be prescribed is because it would be in a nursing home or an assisted living facility that has policies that state that anything administered by the staff to a resident must be prescribed by a healthcare provider. So that's the only reason it needs to be prescribed. It would not have to be prescribed if family or someone the family hired or the resident themselves or the elder took it themselves. And who's to say, to answer the other part of your question, yes, it is a registered nurse may, for an amount of remedy or supplement that is outside the manufacturer's recommended dosage. That's where I'm getting at. Because the manufacturer is the one that recommends the dosage, not the FDA, who has based that information on sound scientific studies as to what dose of a particular active ingredient is safe and efficable.
Okay, thank you. Do you want any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Charlotte.
You're welcome.
Let's go to the people in the room. Virginia Smiley. Virginia's with the Pioneer Homes. So, yeah. Virginia, state your name and affiliation and give
Thank
us your
you.
Testimony.
For the record, I'm Virginia Smiley. I'm the director of the Division of Pioneer Homes for the Department of Health and Social Services. Madam Chair, I want to give you a brief overview of the division's position on the RN's involvement in the administering dietary supplements. And we are kind of the ones that started this originally. The Pioneer Home has a procedure for administering supplements, and it includes a written order from a primary prescribing physician or practitioner who indicates the brand name and the dosage. We also require a release form signed by the resident or his representative. The supplements are privately purchased by the family. They have to come to us in original sealed containers. They have to have a label that includes the brand, the lot number, the expiration date, the resident's name, the room number, the dosage, and the frequency. This is our Pioneer Home policy and procedure. In addition, our pharmacy is informed of any supplement so they can monitor it in reference to resident diagnosis, disease, or possible drug interaction. Finally, our policy includes voluntary agreement by the RN to administer supplements reviewed on a case-by-case basis. We prefer to have RN involvement in supplement administration for the very same reasons we have their involvement in medication administration.
Now, I have a question quick.
Certainly.
Do RNs, LPNs, who gives the medications?
RNs, if they choose to do so.
Okay.
We're talking about just RNs in our policy.
All right.
If a nurse is unsure about something that's been ordered, whether it's a medication or an herbal supplement, the nurse has an obligation to get in touch with the primary care provider or whoever prescribed this and ask questions. What's being ordered? Could it interfere with other meds? That's what we expect nurses to do with medications. That's what we would expect them to do with supplements as well. We expect our nurses to, one, know their patients or their residents, and to know the risk-benefit of each medication that's ordered. We expect them to treat supplements in the same manner. We would much rather have a nurse involved with a well-planned procedure for supplement administration than have a family member bringing in a Ziploc bag full of unknown, unmarked pills, dispensing them in an unsupervised, unstructured manner. And I would disagree that administering something ordered by a care provider violates any code of ethics or is outside the scope of nursing practice, and I am not a nurse. Practitioners have an obligation to try to do everything they can to improve the quality of life for their patients. And the gal from Denali Center spoke to that. And that may include monitoring and administering a supplement that has shown a benefit to an individual patient. The Board of Nursing has, by their own admission, been grappling with this issue since 1998, yet there's still nothing in statute or regulation that directs nurses on how to handle this specific issue. There have been only Board of Nursing opinions or positions. So in conclusion, the Pioneer Homes actually supports HB 467. And a couple of comments. I think that Ms. Griesel was very articulate in her her presentation of her points, but it seems to me that all her arguments support our involvement if indeed what we're concerned about is the protection of public safety. It's much better to have an educated, informed professional helping residents and family members, providing information and answering questions, than it is to have a family member not be able to come in and administer a supplement and ask a housekeeper, hey, I can't come in, here's a baggie of something, would you please give one to, I mean, realistically that could happen. Would you give one to my mom every day? Now, it wouldn't be an RN administering it, but a housekeeper could, or somebody from the food service department. And I think that all of these arguments really support RN involvement in supplement administration. And I think there is a compromise here somewhere. We feel pretty strongly about our policy and procedure with the Pioneer Homes. It's on a case-by-case basis. Our pharmacy is involved. The prescribing practitioner is involved. The RN is involved. We have assisted living coordinators who are involved, administrators who are involved. It's not something that we treat lightly. We're not doing it with any number of things. We're very specific on a case-by-case basis. So I think that there is some compromise that we can come to here and suit everybody's needs.
Okay,
and I'll answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Nancy Davis?
Good afternoon. Chairman Wilson, my name is Nancy Davis, and I've been a registered nurse for 37 years, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska Nurses Association. We appreciated the contact from Representative Kelly's office as he grappled with House Bill 467. I think that the letter that our president responded with identified that nutritional supplements and botanicals and herbs really are a complex piece of the healthcare system. They seem rather simple when you walk into the grocery store or any pharmacy and you can just pick from a wide array of possibilities. You just pluck them right off the shelf. You really don't even have to know what's in them. If your neighbor said it was good, then you might try it. That is sort of the state of the supplement world in our country. Other countries have a far more involved process for nutritional supplements. So the U.S. has not moved as far forward. So we start out by recognizing as nurses that it is another complexity, and then you add that to a fragile or a frail patient's care plan, and it becomes even more complex. There is a difference in self-administering, deciding that you'll put something in your mouth and swallow it, from deciding that you will actually administer something to someone who may not be even able to respond. So there is a difference in the context. I guess the first thing that as you've heard today, the opinions even of our membership, registered nurses across the state, go from A to Z in terms of whether they support administering and being involved in administering supplements, to the other end where they say there's no way I would give one of those things to anybody anywhere, I wouldn't take them myself. So our membership is widely divided as nurses across the state. I think that the one thing I would say is that we, even with our wide division, we feel like we always have to look at developments and improvements in the healthcare system, things that change rapidly. If there is an increasing safety measure that occurs, then nursing needs to know about it, and that may change how they respond to a problem. If there is new evidence that a supplement actually creates a benefit in a condition, then we need to be prepared for how that is incorporated into our practice. We do support the Board of Nursing as the defining agent in the standard of practice of professional nursing in our state. We really are lucky in that our State Practice Act is actually extremely well respected nationally. We have had the luxury of looking at many other states before we even defined nursing practice in our state. So I will say that we do support the board's defining nursing practice for professional nurses. It's actually in their obligation. With that said, we also think that there is room, certainly in this circumstance, the issue of supplements, for us to delve into the information that is available in 2006 and look at, have there been changes that increase the safety? Are there differences now that didn't exist in 1998 or in the previous considerations of the Board of Nursing? And for that reason, the Alaska Nurses Association is convening its Professional Practices Committee to do everything we to look at everything we can find. We already began that process in a recent meeting, and found that the U.S. Pharmacopeia does now have a process for verifying food supplements or nutritional supplements. It's voluntary. A manufacturer can elect to have their product verified, and when that happens, there is a mark on the bottle that says USP verified. That might provide some measure of safety to some components. We recognize that there are dangers out there with food supplements that are not regulated. You don't have to go very far. In fact, in Juneau, there were at least two women who developed chronic debilitating and disabling conditions from over-the-counter L-tryptophan that turned out to be tainted and had a chemical in it that caused a blood disease. So you don't have to go far to find the scary part, but we also need to continue to look for the safety margin, because we, I think as registered nurses, we all have the obligation that we cannot intentionally or negligently harm a patient. And that really is the highest calling, I think, in our practice. So we intend to take our findings from our Professional Practices Committee back into discussion with the Board of Nursing and work together on arriving at the most appropriate, safest, reasonable, professionally responsible position. And that would be in consideration of any new developments that may have occurred since it was last studied. I think that we recognize that the there was a Nutrition Business Journal that said in 2004 the nutrition supplement or dietary supplement business was a over, I think, $20.3 billion industry. It is a huge business, and there are reasons why companies will not subject their products for verification, many reasons. Some of them yield a dangerous product. Some of them yield a product we just don't know what the content is. So in closing, I would say that the Alaska Nurses Association would hope that we could resolve this question without House Bill 467, but using the process through the State Board of Nursing to examine and then develop standards and for professional nursing practice through that existing avenue. That's it. Anybody have a question?
Thank you. And Nancy, I'd like to ask you, this bill was generated, as I understand it, because of one of the supplements that I'm familiar with, and that's glucosamine. And I certainly agree that there's supplements that we know. It's pretty widespread information out there, even to the general public, that can be dangerous, like St. John's wort and things like that. But I know with my own advanced nurse practitioner, every single year I go in with what I take and the dosage that I take, and we go over what the research has been, and there's never been anything that she's been able to tell me that was negative about glucosamine, and the and the degree that it has helped me, I'm thinking of those folks in facilities where they're being taken care of. If it affects them the way it does me, their quality of life would be definitely impacted. And this could take some time. I'm just kind of concerned about quality of life issues for individuals on something like this. And we all know that sometimes these processes can take a long time, when in fact there doesn't appear to be, okay, the chondroitin is perhaps an issue, but glucosamine itself. And there's others, I suspect, other supplements that may have similar kinds of impacts.
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, there actually has been a study called the GATE trial, or the Glucosamine Arthritis Intervention Trial, and has found that that there are groups of patients for whom glucosamine is beneficial in pain control for arthritis of the knee. So there is some studies. There are studies about a number of the supplements. There is a National Institute of Health Office of Dietary Supplements. They don't regulate them and they don't know the content of them, but they study the effects of them mostly for efficacy. Do they work? Do they do what they're supposed to? I think that that when you look at a bill that says dietary supplements, you can't just limit it to glucosamine or the ones that people have had good experience with, that you have to be prepared that it could be any of the dietary supplements that you do know and the ones that you don't yet know. So the bill, and I guess that's why I go back to, I would hope that we could resolve this question through through the Board of Nursing, working with current information and in collaboration with our other partners, which would be possibly the pharmacist and the Board of Medicine, to look at the impact of this. So I'm not saying that they aren't useful, but many people will have different experiences with them.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you. If that's the case, do you have a timeline?
The Alaska Nurses Association, our timeline is that, I don't know if Kathy Giesel is still on, but our hope was to bring our information hopefully to the June meeting of the Board of Nursing. And we have to get on their agenda, but I think this is a topic that they have concern about as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Any other questions? I know. thank you, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We've got one more, and I've Rod Beatty, who is with the Alaska Hospital Association.
Madam Chair, Rod Beatty, President of Alaska State Hospital Nursing Home Association. I'll try to be brief so you can move along. There's 37 facilities that are members of our association. 23 hospitals, 2 behavioral health facilities, 6 pioneer homes, 5 nursing homes, all state, federal, tribal, private facilities are members except for one, the state. And our members are advised of legislation as it's moving through your process, and each week any who want to weigh in call into our legislative committee meeting and express their opinions. And this bill was brought up and was discussed. And the overwhelming consensus was that something needs to happen to move this issue forward. There's been some excellent testimony. I know a number of people have testified. They're very good, competent, thoughtful people. But it's our view that we need to do something to help patients in this setting, and we think this bill is a good step in that direction. Just briefly, we're talking about prescribed medications here, not just anything off the shelf that somebody might want to, or not medications, but supplements. And other products that right now people are bringing those into facilities unbeknownst or sometimes known to healthcare providers, and is not included in the patient care decisions that are going on and not looked at in light of other medications or their health condition. This would reduce that practice, in our opinion, because there would be more people choosing to have it included as part of the treatment than choosing not to under the permissive nature of the bill. So it would allow either nurses, physicians, and pharmacists, as you have heard testimony from Denali, to look at that those products and make sure that they're not in conflict with something else that's going on. We have a hard time with the dichotomy of saying that most people don't know about these products and what their positive or negative implications are, yet at the same time we have difficulty including them in the healthcare decision where people who do have a better understanding of them can make that choice. So instead we would turn a blind eye to it, and it will happen anyway, and probably with more risk to the patient than if it were part of the healthcare decision. So with the proviso in here that a nurse could elect not to do it, if they don't feel comfortable either with the idea or they don't feel the facility they're operating in has enough of a safe harbor in terms of policy and procedures to protect them if they were to participate and help a patient with those particular supplements, we think it's a good, important piece of legislation and would echo support of it and moving it to the next committee. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Have you thought about specific language that would clarify that a nurse could decline to participate?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the bill certainly has permissive language in it right now. It says may, and it's implied that there isn't any repercussion that would occur to that nurse if they choose not to be part of it, and it would go to some other nurse or caregiver to decide whether they want to fill that void. But I have not thought about language that would make that clearer if in fact that's the question. I guess we could work on something to that effect.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you gotten this copy of this 7-point proposed policy for licensed nurse administration of non-FDA approved over-the-counter drugs and nutritional supplements that we have? Have you reviewed that at all?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I have not seen that, so I'm not aware of what it contains.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I have Representative Seaton brought up something. Derek, do you want to come back up here? Is there anybody else that would like to testify that hasn't been able to testify? Kathy Giesel, are you still online?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm still here.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you think, you say that a lot of RNs aren't kind of up on these herbs and things. Do you think that pharmacists are more knowledgeable on this?
I can't speak to that conclusively, but of course pharmacists have access to a wealth of information and, as was testified, can access the FDA website, which has the USP information on it. How many of those pharmacists truly understand the supplements, though, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Thank you. That's one, some of the things, and I'm hoping that the nurses are looking at that, but if we try to come up with some type of a committee substitute or anything, I think we need to wait to see what they say, but I know you kind of want to move this bill at least to the other side. We're not going to take any more testimony is closed, and we have to adjourn. I'm late for my meeting, we will return to this bill, but I would like you to look and on page 2 at the top where it says in this section, the remedies prescribed by a person authorized under this title to prescribe the remedy or supplement. And you know, I think maybe we need to look at that terminology right there, because it's saying that the person is to prescribe it, and I think you might mean to give it, to administer it. That's just something Representative Seat noticed, and so before we meet the next time, you might want to look at that. Okay, thank you very much, and if no one else has any questions, we are adjourned. Thank you.